Beckett was born in Ireland, spent most of his life in Paris, and Endgame, which was first performed in French's Fin de Partie at London's Royal Court Theatre in 1957, is justly regarded as a masterpiece of 20th century avant-garde theatre. Hello, I'm Fiona Gruber, and to find out more about the influences and ideas behind this and his other plays, I spoke with Dr. Mark Byron, Senior Lecturer in Modernism and Modern Contemporary Drama at the University of Sydney. As he starts off by explaining, Beckett's appeal is very broad indeed.
Everybody can claim a piece of Samuel Beckett. He's arguably the most internationalist and wide-ranging literary artist of the 20th century. He's a modernist, a postmodernist, a French writer, an English writer, an Irish writer, a dramatist, short story writer, novelist, etc. Everybody wants a piece of him. Pretty much every variety of philosophical and literary theoretical perspective has been applied to Samuel Beckett.
Would you think he himself would agree with all the labels and categorisation that sort of has gone on around his work?
I think he'd keep a polite silence. That was always his way. When critics or journalists would ask him about what his works meant, he'd say, well, you'd have to ask the characters in the works. They're there to tell you that story, not me.
All the characters in Endgame are pretty challenged, aren't they? You have Ham, who's in a wheelchair and can't stand. You have Clov, who can't sit, who's his attendant, his son. And you've got Nell and Nag, who are his parents, who are in dustbins. So they're completely... Do they have limbs? We're not sure, are we?
They have arms. Nag has stumps. With regard to Ham and Clov, one can stand and one can sit, but neither can do the other. And as Ham says, to each man his speciality. So they function very well as this kind of symbiotic odd couple, one of the many odd couples in Beckett's fiction. And it's this sense of symbiosis, as the saying goes, can't live with them, can't live without them. So they're utterly reliant upon each other, as well as seeking a way to reft each from the other.
When you talk about Beckett, can you talk about a play being about anything? Is Endgame about anything?
Endgame is about the moment before the end. We're not at the end, but we can see the end and there's no way out. It's very easy to read it as bearing some grains of apocalypse. Obviously, it's the land of last things. There are no more bicycles, no more sugar plums, no more coffins. But we don't see the end point of this universe. We see it winding down, but we only see it at the moment preceding the last moment, the penultimate moment. So it's a penultimate play.
So Waiting for Godot, Endgame and Happy Days, another of his better-known longer plays, they're all about people in extremis, people in positions of either destitution or immobility. And he said that he wanted his work to focus on poverty, failure, exile and loss, on man as a non-knower and a non-canner. So some people who can't do and people who can't act.
Yeah, it's an interesting trend throughout his writing from the beginning of his career, this obsession with and compassion for people with physical disabilities. And this is something, it's hard to know exactly where it comes from. We know that his mother suffered a variety of ailments, including Parkinson's disease, which Beckett suffered late in life. That kind of focus upon physical ailments and the fragility of human life, as well as its robustness in the face of that fragility. This sense of, that's where the dark humour comes through. There's a lot of physical humour in Endgame, as well as in Beckett's writing elsewhere. But it's not just to laugh at the characters, but to really identify with them.
What were the influences that were giving him this black view of life, this sort of existential vision?
Well, I think there are two ways of answering that question that relate to one another. With regard to the century he lived in, I think certainly his childhood memories of the First World War, the Easter Rising, the Civil War in Ireland, those memories were couched in terms of his father taking him to view at a safe distance these monumental moments in modern Irish history. But when it comes to the Second World War, of course, he's embroiled very directly in that some of his friends are taken to concentration camps. There's that famous quote where he says, all right, now it's personal. So my friend has been taken away, so I'm going to do my best to work with the Allies, and of course joins the resistance cell, Gloria SMH. So looking at what's happening historically in the French state, we've got all of the problems happening in French Indochina, obviously, in the 1950s. We also have the French state suffering all sorts of problems with its North African colonies as well. There are these ingredients that one might be tempted to draw into their view of what Endgame is about. And I think we're given enough to take that temptation, although I don't think we can say Beckett is laying that out for us. That's work we're doing and we have to take ownership of it, I think. On the other hand, this talk about being at the end of the world, being we've moved from the empty road, the countryside road in Waiting for Godot, to this enclosed space, a bunker-like space. In a way, it's a reflection upon the practice of theatre and the practice of literary making in the first place. When Clove looks outside through the telescope and says, nothing is going on outside. There are no waves, Ham asks, and he says, well, no, there are no more navigators, as though it's the navigators who would determine the physical fact of the waves. At another point in the play, Clove turns that telescope to the audience in that great sort of meta-theatrical moment and talks about, you know, I see multitudes in transports of joy, a quote from Revelations. And of course, that's breaking the fourth wall and engaging in that metadrama. And there's all sorts of examples of that all the way through the play. So in that sense, you could see the play as Beckett reflecting upon the impasse he's really painted himself into as a result of The Unnameable, the last novel in the trilogy, the so-called trilogy, L'Innommable, and Waiting for Godot, where he's struggling to find where creativity might go, having reached this point of, as the narrator of L'Innommable says at the very end, I'll go on, I can't go on, I'll go on.
You'd imagine he'd have been the blackest pessimist, but we all know he had a great sense of humour, and there's so much black humour in his work. He loves slapstick, and that comes out in his plays, doesn't it?
Definitely. There's slapstick all the way through. There's some, obviously, the music hall, vaudeville, they're very strong influences. There's a line of Eastern European and particularly Russian clowning that some critics have done some wonderful work on, that pointing out where some of these archetypes might have been shaped, you know, on their way to Beckett. And of course, Beckett wrote to Sergei Eisenstein early in his career and asked if he could come and be part of his production team. So he's interested, very interested in Russian film from a fairly young age. So it's plausible that there are those kinds of influences as well.
There are lots of literary allusions in Endgame, aren't there?
Yes, underneath its apparently thin veneer, once you start looking for them, they're everywhere. We have biblical quotations, which is very typical of Beckett. But there are also other kinds of references. For example, when Ham and Clove take their circumnavigation around the room, of course you have the Magellan image looming in the background, but you also have Ham being very insistent about being placed at the centre of his universe. So he's in a kind of heliocentric universe where he is the Sun King, the French King Louis XIV, and his development of French classical drama. Another reference that speaks to Beckett's Irish heritage is the presence of the rat in the kitchen. When Clove reports there's a rat in the kitchen, Ham is very up in arms about this. We must get rid of this creature in case the process of evolution begins again, and here we are back at humanity, heaven forbid. Now, if you remember, one of the very famous pages of the Book of Kells has a couple of rats gnawing at the host. This is something that comes up in other Beckett plays, and this has been read as a kind of a commentary on ecclesiastical laziness or even corruption. We also should remember that in terms of rats, we have a direct reference to a very politically charged novel written by Albert Camus, The Plague, in which, you know, the rats loom up from out of the sewers and the foundations of buildings and so on. And this is really a novel that's dealing with matters of state treachery during the Second World War, you know, those who have turned and who are working for the Axis rather than working for the Allies. So, you know, you've got that kind of reference going on as well.
Does this play speak to our times?
I think from the title of the play all the way through to its playfulness with, you know, living in the land of last things, there is this almost burlesque, over-the-top, apocalyptic tone that's taken throughout. Of course, those apocalyptic narratives such as Cormac McCarthy's novel The Road and the film, as well as the great zombie apocalypse that seems to be upon us if you any night you switch your TV on. So that kind of fascination will go through its peaks and troughs, but I think that's the sort of thing that people have been worried about for a long, long time. In a sense, some of the major themes of the play really key into that quite directly. In the subject matter of Endgame, we get this feeling that tomorrow we'll find them in the same place. And of course, in a theatre run, that's self-evidently true. You will actually find them there doing it all over again.
Mark Byron, thanks very much indeed.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Endgame by Samuel Beckett, directed by Sam Strong, is playing at Southbank Theatre, the Sumner, from the 21st of March to the 25th of April. Book online at mtc.com.au/endgame or phone the box office on 03 8688 0800. This podcast is part of the MTC Talk series. To listen to more episodes from the series, visit mtc.com.au/mtctalks or search for MTC Talks in the iTunes Store or on SoundCloud.